Actually, you know, worship, I mean, I know worship should be focusing on Jesus, you know, and that's what it did today. But I actually want to speak about Jesus, and I know it should be quite obvious, but if you hear the message, I hope that it will open up new realities of Jesus, and just how easily we substitute Jesus with something good, very good. And I'll mention a couple of things, and you guys want to, when I mention them, you might want to crucify me at some stage. You might want to shoot me. Let me not put myself in the same category as Jesus here. Like, that you would might, because this is the things that I'm going to mention as the possible substitutes. It's so good, and we celebrate these things so much in our midst. But even though they are so good, I'm not going to speak about the Springboks. Look, everybody wasn't rejoicing that the Springboks won. My wife is Japanese, right? And I didn't hear a lot of compassion during the worship here. Jesus, we know we just rejoiced when... And I had to comfort my poor wife there. But it's not merely rugby, cars, wealth, and these type of things that can become a substitute to Jesus. You know, there's a verse, it's actually a couple of times repeated in the New Testament, that is a verse in the Old Testament. It says, the stone that was rejected by the builders is the stone that is destined to be the cornerstone. Now, there's many stones in our midst that is important. I'll give you one example. Love. Love is such an important stone. But if you substitute love for the cornerstone, and you have slogans like love wins, and which you build, your building is going to be very skew and going to be a very misrepresentation of what Jesus had. Okay, I just want to mention a couple of things that I think will be important to set us on stability, you know, in the way that we build our lives. You know, a couple of years ago, I had a lady in a comm that I was leading. And you know, sometimes you get these people that every time they ask for a prayer, Jesus answers them. It's like this irritating people, you know. It's like, she had like a serious issue of her son, and I knew her son. And she would say to us, listen, I asked Jesus to just save him. And you know, in your heart you go like, you know, she will still learn. It doesn't work like that. You know, and then Jesus saves her. Saves him, you know. And then the next time she said, like, look, I've got this issue and at calm. And then she said, like, but it's all right. I've asked Jesus. And again, I'm thinking, this poor lady, you know. Next week at calm, she will go like, you guys won't believe it. Jesus just answered my prayer and he sorted that thing out, you know. And so I've seen just over a period of time, time and again, how Jesus will answer a prayer. There's an issue, Jesus will take it away. But you know, I knew there's going to come a time. I knew there's going to come a time where Jesus is not going to answer that. Because she had to learn something. She had to learn that Jesus is not just the one that makes her life better, which he has done so many times. But she needs to learn that Jesus is her life. She needs to learn that Jesus is her joy. And she once then came to us, just like Paul. Like Paul, I mean, can you imagine Paul asked this prayer? It's like, I asked the Lord once, and he didn't answer me. It's like Paul goes for a serious crisis here. I've got a thorn in my flesh, which was sent by a messenger from Satan to keep me humble, right? I'm sure that the devil was really concerned about Paul's pride issues, and so therefore he tried to keep him humble, and he sent him a messenger from Satan. Paul is like, I prayed, I asked God, please remove it. And Paul is like in this, God did not answer my prayer. I mean, what's so interesting for me about this whole thing is, you know, we get blown away if we've got one answered prayer a year. Paul gets blown away when he prays and it didn't get answered. He says, a second time I'm asking. It's like, woohoo, there's a line breaking just quickly. Second time, still not. Third time, not. Something seriously is going wrong with Paul's prayer life, his walk with God. Where are you, God? Anyway, this woman went through the same crisis. She had like that type of thing with God going as Paul. It's like, boom, answered, boom, answered, boom. No way, something is wrong. Second time, no. Third time, no. And her issue was she had a boss that was verbally bullying her and verbally abusing her in a very, very, very bad way. When I heard the stories, I thought, like, yes, that's pretty hectic, you know. And so she was saying to us, you know, she's praying for God to give her a new job. And everything, every opportunity that happens just closes. Just don't get the job, you know. And then she asked for God to remove the boss. Jesus doesn't answer that one as well, you know. And so she asked us, you know, it's like this crisis, you know, I don't know what to do. And I said to her, yes, you know what, God is taking you from a place where he is not only giving you breakthrough, where he's not only giving you joy, where he's not only giving you peace, but where he becomes your peace, where he becomes your joy. And then you completely circumstance proof, if you may, right? And so she battled through this thing until she decided that Jesus, well, I think it's in 1 Timothy 1, where Paul says, Christ, who is my hope. He's not merely the giver of hope, right? He is my hope. He's not merely giving me joy. I mean, that's the classic charismatic thing, you know, a guy stand in the line, today we're going to do the joy thing. And everybody is laughing, you know. God has just bestowed joy on me. It's all there, you know. Boom, I go out of the room. The first thing that disturbs me, and there goes my joy, right? That's not ultimately the life that Jesus wants us to live. He wants us to live a place where life can throw whatever in us, but we're not rooted and grounded in those things. We're rooted and grounded in him. And so we are always full of joy, no matter what the circumstances is. This girl, then, this lady, then comes to a place where she finally decides, all right, Jesus, you are going to be my hope. You're going to be my joy, regardless of anything. I'm not going to seek ways of escape out of this job situation. I'm going to find my joy, my peace in you. And so she goes back to the work, and a new person goes there. The Monday, she goes waiting for the boss to come in and give her the lowdown. Boss opens up the door, and he walks straight to her with everything in his face ready to give it to her. And as he starts going for it, suddenly his tongue got stuck in his palate. And for a couple of minutes, the guy's just staring with his eyes this big at her. Can't do anything. And until she had to say, listen, I think if you go out, there's a meeting waiting for you. And he walks out. And since that time, never again, he said one word against her. And again, God answered a prayer for her. But it wasn't after she first learned the lesson that she could really say, I don't even care anymore. Because Jesus, you're enough for me. And so here's some of the things that we need to understand is not our foundation, right? Is not what we build on. Firstly, we need to know that Christianity, and I'll explain it now, is not, I know we will say it's a holiness movement, but it's not a moral code. You know, one of the things that we immediately find is when people ask me this question, then the red lights go on and off for me immediately. Listen here. Is this sin? How far can I go with a girl? Is bloody a swear word? You know, and they, you know, if people are down that line, I know that there's a serious wrong foundation on which they build. All right? And so Paul goes in 2 Corinthians 3. It's one of my favorite portions here. 2 Corinthians 3, verse 1 to 6. He says, are we beginning to commend ourselves again? Or do we need, as some do, letters of recommendation to you or from you? You yourself are our letters of recommendation written on our hearts to be known and read by all. And you show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on the tablets of stone, but the tablets of human hearts. Such is the confidence that we have through Christ towards God. Not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything is coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God, who has made us competent to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. What is the letter? The law. All right. I like that. So the letter kills. I must be careful now here. So the letter kills, and the Spirit gives life. I'll give you guys my definition of the letter, and then I'll explain why it's the law. But you know, you can get New Testament law as well. You can get Old Testament law, New Testament law. It doesn't really matter, right? So Paul is not saying that we shouldn't do the law. I mean, he's not saying, all right, guys, you can really just steal, kill as much as you want to. That's not his point. But a letter is this. When Paul refers to the letter, you know what he says? A letter is this. It's an acting script. All right? And so an acting script, this acting script, by the way, that Paul is referring to, is the best acting script ever. The law, by the way, is the only portion in all of the Bible that was written by God. The rest of the Bible is all written by humans. You know, it's man-made. Yeah, that's right, you know, inspired by God, but man-made. Except one portion, the law, it's written by God. His own finger went, wrote the 10 commandments for us, right? Authorship, God. Now, can I just say something about this letter, about the script? It is perfect. You can't get better than that script. It is as good as it gets. And so I hand out the script to each of you. We can actually modify it and even make it a little bit more better. We can get some New Testament rules and laws in there, prompt it up and say, here's the script. And for the one that acts the best, you get a reward. You know that there's Oscars in heaven for the best actors. But even though you are able to act out, and that's the problem with us. Some are better actors than others. You know, some are terrible actors. You know, they just can't act out the script well, and they find themselves always in trouble. Others are much better actors. But it doesn't matter, because God is not after actors. You know, you get good flesh and you get bad flesh. You know, some of us naturally are able to just act good. You know? And some of us are not so good actors, you know. You step on your tone and you lose your acting skills completely, you know. But God is not after acting. He came with something much more powerful. He came with His Spirit. And so that He transform our being, right? So that we can be transformed inside out and not merely have a good act and a good performance. And so many of Christianity is just an act. And that act just kills, but it's the Spirit that transforms from inside. You know, there is lots of hopes that you guys turn to regularly. We've heard the hope of wealth. That can be a trick. But I'm going to tell you, there's a hope that all of us in here turns to, right? And right now, so many of you are turning to that hope. Can I tell you something about this hope? No hope has disappointed you more than this hope. And that hope is you. Because nothing has disappointed you more than you. If you want to do this Christianity and your hope is in you, you're going to be disappointed every time. But Christ in us, the hope of glory, is a sure hope by which we can live and by which we can overcome, where it is not merely hanging on our acting skills, but in the power of Him. And then in 2 Corinthians 3 verse 14, he says this. He says, even till today, whenever the law of Moses. But their minds were hardened, for to this day, when the reading of the Old Testament, the same veil remains unlifted, because through Christ it's taken away. And so what he's saying, even till today, the movie, the acting script is read over people. And people every time today still understand that Christianity is an acting script, that whoever can perform it the best will overcome. It's amazing. Even till today, the Bible says, the law is read over people. But as it's read over people, a veil remains over their eyes, because somehow we are tricked to think Christianity is merely a moral code. Yes, to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But, verse 16, but when one turns to Jesus, to the Lord, I hope it's right here. But when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. Now where the Lord is, it's the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And now we all, hallelujah, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed in the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Here's another foundation that I think is a... Now you guys need to hold on to your chairs, which is not the foundation. Now you guys understand, I really say, I'm not promoting sin. I'm not promoting holiness. I'm saying that. I'm just saying that can't be the foundation. Jesus needs to be the foundation, and out of that holiness would come. So everything I mentioned something, don't think I'm against it. No, I'm so for it. I'm just saying that it can't be the foundation, all right? The church is not the foundation. The church is not the foundation. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten church, so whoever believes in her will not perish, but have eternal life. You know, I sometimes hear it, I'm just thinking, I know what people mean, and I know the good intention of it. But the answer to the world is the local church. I don't believe that. Now, I think there is nothing that can bring the truth of Jesus to people and grow people up in Jesus like the church. Nothing expresses Jesus like the local church. But the local church is not the answer to a dying world. Jesus is. And come to church does not change people. Attending our meetings as such does not change people. Merely touching, merely attending doesn't change people. And we must watch out on how we disciple people. We can't disciple people merely to attendance. We disciple people to Jesus. Now, Acts 2:42, right? You guys are with me. Rings a bell? All right. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. Next verse, Acts 4, verse 32. Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one said that any of these things that belonged to him was his own, but they had everything in common. You know those verses that I just read? Now just let go of your religious minds just for a moment, all right? Do you know what that is? Communism. That is communism. Communism at its best. In fact, if Karl Marx, which was at least the thinker and founder in the philosophy behind communism, would have read that and heard there's a community that lives out his ideology, his first thing would have gone to them and says, how are you guys able to do it? This is so awesome. What is the difference, though, between the New Testament or the early church and communism? See, it's not the end product or the aim that is different. It's the means that's the difference. It's the foundation. For communism to achieve that goal, they have to use every form of manipulation, every form of force, every form of killing, of brainwashing, in order to get a people to say, I'm not going to live for myself, I'm going to live for the community. Karl Marx would have gone to these guys and says, like, listen guys, how are you doing it? What law? What way did you trick them to live that? And then it says, well, I don't know. We just met Jesus and suddenly a new desire, a new heart lived in us. That we don't want to just live for ourselves, but we want to pour our possessions on others. We want to share everything. We don't want to live for ourselves. You know what's the great thing about capitalism? Capitalism in its core says live for yourself. And so that's very easy for people to do. You don't need a lot of laws to make people live for themselves. You just work hard and you make the whole system work for the bigger whole and capitalism work fine. The difficulty with communism is he says don't live for yourself, live for the community. You need a lot of laws. You need a lot of oppression to make people live for not themselves but for the greater. Unless you're founded in Jesus. A couple of years ago, I went to Japan, and my wife's dad is a pastor. And there's a group of people to the south of Japan that he sees every now and then. They don't have any local church. They're just so spread out, and there is no local church in that area. And so he says to me, look, he's going there once a month, and then the people come from far, and they gather in the house, and he just encourages them and teaches them a little bit. And so he says to me, no, he's going to go there. And I'm thinking in my mind, this will be so awesome. I'm going to actually try and start a church here. I'm going to start and helping them function and just kind of get them to meet up. I will leave to South Africa and regularly write them letters. We can call it epistles if you want to. But I'll just do that and, you know. So we get there and here is the room full of believers. And I said to them, guys, why don't you do this? Why don't we commit that once a week you guys gather in a house and you share a meal? Once a week you come in and this house will be then a house where you guys can, this room or this meeting will be then a place where you guys can share what is going on in your lives. And you guys can hear one another and encourage one another. But one rule was you're not allowed to gossip, which is sometimes a problem there. And then you can't conclude on something that is negative. So meaning you can't just vomit all your problems and then you guys just walk away. So just kind of turn it in such a way that it's not just... And so they all agreed that they can do it. And so it's after a while we initiate some conversation. Obviously I can't understand, but I stand back and I just see how conversation is running. Community life at its best. And I'm like, wow. That's so awesome. But then I noticed there was one unbeliever also in the meeting. And this girl, I mean, she is chatting just as much with as all the others. And I walked away from that time and I asked the Lord. I said, God, I mean, this was awesome. I mean, we had all the ingredients which should be in a church. There was community life. There was vulnerability. People were real with one another. And I felt the Lord spoke to me so clear. He said, like, you had all those ingredients, but it was on the wrong foundation. It was not on the foundation that is me. Mere community life is not an answer. Hippie says community life. Mere vulnerability is not an answer. The AA has vulnerability in their meetings. Right? And we're not just a bunch of hippies in an AA meeting. Right? And sometimes we start settling on just a mere form of church life and not bringing people to Jesus to really change their lives. Another one. I've got some. Oh, it's gonna be good. The next one is really good, you guys. Christianity is not a discipline. All right. Now. Of course, there is discipline in Christianity. And again, like the church is the most beautiful thing for Jesus on the earth. It just cannot be the foundation. Love is such an important ingredient, it just cannot be the foundation. Discipline, hear me, I'm not saying discipline is not important, but discipline can just not be the foundation. Now, when I was at TMT with these guys, you know, I would regularly have them together, and then I would just have them sit in a circle. I'm trying to help guys, and we're trying to help together for people to grow up in Jesus, you know. And so regularly I would ask, okay, guys, how are you doing? How's your walk with Jesus going? And I found this answer to be a standard answer. In fact, 85% of the time, at least for a TMT student, this would be the answer. I'm doing great. I'm really doing great. I'm doing well with Jesus. I'm just not spending enough time with Jesus. I mean, it just becomes so standard. And I'm like, what is this unattainable, not just spending enough time with Jesus? What is this, you know? Where is the line? Where is the end that we just know, okay, at least I'm there, so I'm fine now. There was this unspoken, unreachable, unattainable, I'm just not spending enough time with Jesus, all right? Now, in Hebrews 11, verse 5 and 6, I'm finding myself now. Oh, just before we read there, that's what I want to say. How many of you have ever been fit in your life? All right, slowly shoulders. Like, okay, how many of you have ever lost your fitness? All right. How many of you ever, when you lost your fitness at some stage, had to kind of build up that courage to decide, I need to get fit again? But you remember, you remember how fit you were. You remember from how far you have fallen. And now it's time for you to return to your former fitness. But it's a mountain so high that just the thought of going back there makes you tired. You know that feeling? That's how many people feel about their Christianity. Because their Christianity is a discipline. And they've somehow maybe lost a little bit of, they've lost their Bible study in that, and now it's time to return. But you see it in their eyes. Just the mere fact of returning to that makes them tired. Well, Jesus is saying, come to me while weary and heavy burdened. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And see, somehow, we are not directing people to Jesus. We are directing them to a discipline. I've seen so many times, you counsel with people, and so it would always be interesting for me, sit with a guy that's struggling. He's struggling in his walk with the Lord. And I've seen, it's always difficult when you counsel with somebody else because somebody needs to be quiet, you know. And so you need to see that. And you can't kind of... So then there's a couple of times that, okay, I'm just going to be quiet this time. And just... So then I see, this is standard counsel. All right. How's it going with your relationship with the Lord? Yeah, I just don't find you... All right. What I want you to do is I want you to wake up every morning at 5. Read one chapter out of the book of John. And after that, you pray for 20 minutes. You phone me afterwards. I'll phone you up to see how it's going. At 5, that will be. You see, that sounds brilliant, right? And I'm not against Bible reading. This is good things to do. I'm not saying that's again. But see, somehow, we are pointing people not to God, but the God of seeking God. And after they have tried to perfect the art of seeking God, they still haven't come to God. So, Hebrews 11, sorry. I just needed to have a bit of a launch. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not... I don't really need verse 5, but it is just such a cool verse, so I just put it in there. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God has taken him. Now, before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith, it's impossible to please him. For whoever would not draw near to God must believe that he exists. All of you think you can do well on that one, right? At least whenever you come to God, you must believe he exists. You must, as some translation says, whoever comes to God must believe he is. I like that a bit more. Must believe he is. Now let me just tell you, right now, God is sitting on a throne. You can't see him when you would come into that room and see him on his throne. And the end of the throne is so that you will also not see the end of the throne. Out of that throne is flashes of lightning. In front of that, there's a crystal sea of glass. In front of that, on that crystal sea of glass, where he is sitting in front of his throne, there is four living creatures with eyes and wings. One has the face of an ox, one of the face of a lion, one of the face of an eagle, one of the face of a man. And continuously they're falling down before God. In between there's the seven spirits of God, and between them there is the lamb that was slain before the foundation of the earth. Around that is 24 elders throwing in their crowns all the time. Holy, holy, holy. You step into that room, none of you will ever go like, I don't know if I feel like worshiping today, you know. You know. By the way, that is God right now. And you know, we every morning come to God. No, you're not coming to God. You're just coming to seeking God. If you come to God and you believe he is, it will be a whole different ballgame. Secondly, he who comes to God must believe he is, and he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Now, when we were at TMT, you know, I miss TMT. At TMT, people write in, you know, and then if they don't do certain things well, you have the means to punish them. They're right then, so you can do it. I wish I could do it at the church, you know. All right, three times not at our meeting, detention for you, my man. I just can't do that, you know. But it was great at Team T. We could do that, you know. So what we would do with guys is we need to find ways to punish guys. Okay, they would come late to class and continuously. Now we need to find ways to punish them. It was very difficult to find ways. I mean, it's still a Bible school, so you can't do too ungodly things with them. So you're thinking, so what at the end, what we come up with was work duties. None of the things that you ever got, right? So they got work duties. And so the work duty was at a Friday afternoon for half an hour, whatever amount of time, I can't even remember. They needed to do something. The problem was some of them did so many times the wrong things. After a while, you didn't know what to do with them, all right? So after, you know, he's cleaning the leaves, and then the leaves are clean, and it's like, you just need to get creative to keep them busy, but it's like a work duty, and it needs to seem serious, and it needs to seem like they are doing something, all right? So imagine this, just didn't know what to do with them. And so I called them up, I called them in a room, and I said, listen, guys, I've got 20,000 rand in here, in this room. And I know some of you that will cover your studies. If you find it, you can keep it. All right? And now you need to seek that now for the next half an hour, starting now. And they're like, all right, I'll do my work duty. It's like, look like you're seeking, man. And just do it at least properly. Lift it. Yeah, that's it, that's it, that's it. Look a little bit there. You look, yeah, that sounds good, that sounds good, that sounds good. Now lift up that chair. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You are doing the seeking game brilliantly. Just a little bit more. Just look a little bit more intent. All right, there we go. Half an hour finished. Not two more minutes, please. All right, finished. That's how some of us see God. You just did the art of seeking God with no expectation to find God. He who comes to God must believe he is, and he is a rewarder, meaning he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Now, scene number two. I called people in. I said, listen, guys, I'm not joking. In this room is 20,000 rand. No time limit to it. You find it, it's yours. You want to see how people go for it? If they know that it's in here, they just need to find it and it's theirs. You need to see this going. This like. You'll see crazy people in there. I won't stop until I find it. Sorry, baby. Imagine you go after half an hour and you go like, is it finished yet? No. When are you going to stop? Until you find it. See, we've not perfected the art of seeking God. We want God. And when I'm reading my Bible, all that I'm looking for is Him. Where is Him? He's about to reveal Himself. Where are you, Jesus? Where are you? Where are you? Even in Leviticus, He is there. I just need to find Him. He is there. I don't read Bible. I seek Jesus. All right. Where is He? Where is He? Where is He? Jesus, You said You will reward me. You said You will reveal Yourself. The word here is what He says. Whoever comes to God must come with expectation. No one should come to God with fulfilling the duty of seeking God. My half an hour is finished. Last one. Just need to remember what it is. Oh, yeah. All right. The foundation for Christianity is not good doctrine. Now, again, you guys are going to go like, look, I'm not saying good doctrine is bad. I'm just saying it's not the foundation. And some people's Christianity is the art to know doctrine. And somehow, in their hearts, they subtly have come to the belief that if they know doctrine, they know Jesus. And knowing doctrine is not knowing Jesus, even if it is the most correct doctrine, which all of us always claims to have. It's not the correct doctrine that is equal to Jesus, even though it is so super correct and has a couple of big words in there as well. It's not Jesus. My favorite portion of scripture is in Matthew 16. Matthew 16, Jesus asks a question, all right? People that have known me know that, so they know Matthew 16, all right? But Matthew 16 asks this question, and Jesus asks them, you know, guys, who do the people say I am? You know, so some say you are John the Baptist, some say you're Elijah. So then he turns it around and he said, all right, but who do you say I am? And the one with the big mouth, Peter, says, something just doesn't change about Peter. Huh? Simon Peter reply, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Can I ask you guys here? Would you say Peter's doctrine is pretty accurate? That's pretty good doctrine right there. I mean, the question was asked, who are you? And he says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Surely for that answer, Peter should get a blessing. Watch it now. He's going to get a blessing. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah. Why is he blessed? Because he got the right answer. No? He was not blessed because he got the right answer. And see, so much in the church is concerned whether we get the right answer or not. What is your doctrine of justification? Listen here, if you've ever tried to evangelize, you would pretty soon realize that teaching the person the doctrine of justification and him getting it will not save him. Yeah. Doctrine of election. It's a brilliant doctrine, man. Just teach it to the guy. Know it. You know it. You know it. He's still not saved. What is the answer to the world? Jesus. I know. Jesus is the answer to the world. What is the answer for the church? No, it's good doctrine, man. If you ever try to evangelize, you will quickly, very quickly realize that the only answer for a world is for a person to see Jesus. But why do we come to the church and believe that merely knowing doctrine will be the answer for them? Listen, I'm not, again, you guys know what I'm saying. Jesus said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, because flesh and blood has not revealed it to you." The blessing is not what the answer is. The blessing is, where did you get your answer? Man and the church are so concerned what the answer is. God is just asking one thing. Where did you get your answer? Was that answer merely taught to you by flesh and blood? Or did that answer come to you for a revelation of Jesus? And then he goes on and he says, on this rock, on the revelation of Jesus, I will build my church. Listen to this. I said it, I thought about it the other day, and just it was so cool for me. So maybe it will be cool to you. There is not one bit of progress in the church that is worthwhile in the kingdom that does not find its origin in a revelation of Jesus. Nothing in the church will stand that is secondhand. Nothing in the church will stand that is secondhand. Right? I know how to do the worship moves now. It's like, wow. And Jesus is answering one question. Where did you get your moves? Oh, just flesh. That's what everybody does, you know, Jesus. No, I don't care. Where did you get your moves? Where did you get that answer with the smile? That's what everybody told me to do. No. I see that's what they do. No. There's no blessing in that. The only blessing will come that which is built out of a revelation of Jesus, that which come out of a relationship with Jesus. There is no space in the church of God of anything secondhand. Unless we find. Now I ask you guys, if we try and build people up, are we going to pump people up with the right answers? You know, quoting scriptures, which is great. Are we going to point people to Jesus? Knowing that unless they're founded on Him, unless they see Him, there is just simply no progress in the kingdom. It looks impressive. Hallelujah. Yes, Jesus. Yes, Jesus. But it is nothing unless it is founded in a revelation of Jesus. Jesus said to the Pharisees, you know, he said in John 5, verse 39, he says, you search the scriptures. You search the scriptures. You think in knowing Bible that you will find life. But there is no life in knowing the Bible. And can I honestly tell you, because it's not like I tried to give myself a knowing the Bible, actually. So I'm not a Pharisee, I actually do it. I actually try to know the Bible. But I can tell you, Jesus said, there's no life in the Bible. For this very scriptures, Jesus says, points to me. And you're not willing to come to me, which is Jesus. You know, if we go outside here, my baby. If we go outside here, there will be a sign and say, I don't know, it's somewhere close. We will find a sign that says McDonald's 500 meters. You know, it's sometimes so awesome. Signs and wonders, scriptures, all those things. The testimony of prophecy, of the spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus. You know, scriptures testify of Jesus. Prophecy testifies of Jesus. Signs and wonders testify of Jesus. But we just sometimes love to just hold that pole. It says, McDonald's 500 meters. It's like, oh man, I love the sign. I just know it. 500 meters, McDonald's. The sign was not there for it to be embraced. Scriptures was not merely there for you to know it. It's for you to come to the McDonald's. It's for you to come to the person of Jesus. And let us not substitute him with any fluff, with any other things. Let's get to the person. I'm over. All right, let me pray. Oh, Jesus, even when we worship you tonight, and you were just so here, God, I pray that it just was so refreshing again, God. Just that you truly are the answer. And Jesus, we know that there's so many other good things. But Father, let us never get tricked in replacing even those good things with knowing you. Father, I pray that even as a Paul, a rich life, could say at the end of the life, I consider all things a loss for the excellence of knowing you. Father, again afresh, we want to put our pursuit on a person. Not on a thing, not on a doctrine, not on a discipline, not on even mere holiness. But we want to put it on you. Praise you and we honor you. Amen.